Please stand. As we do the pledge tonight, it's good to give thanks, give honor to our veterans. Today, November 11th, honors the day that World War I ended, and over 17 million soldiers and civilians lost their lives. The Europeans celebrate Armistice Day today, and today as we do the pledge, let's do them honor. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Gaylord.
Here.
Grunch.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Sansom.
Here.
Town.
Make a motion that we excuse Commissioner Town due to illness of his fiance.
Second.
Roll call.
Gaylord.
Aye.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, before we get into the consent agenda, I would like to take a moment of silence and make a personal prayer for Marilyn Gaither, Chief Gaither's mother, who passed away last week. So we'll just take a moment and remember. Our first item of business is the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will automatically be respected. Tonight we have the approval of the October 28th minutes.
I might make a motion to approve as presented.
Second.
Roll call.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Gaylord.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, our next item of business is hearing citizens' comments on non-agenda items. Anyone that's here in regards to the fluoride item, which is 8A on their agenda, will have an opportunity to speak. And anyone who does wish to speak this evening, please state your name, your address, and please hold your comments to 5 minutes. So at this time, do we have anyone that wishes to address the commission on a non-agenda item?
Are you saying that we will have an opportunity to talk after 8A?
Yes. Okay. During the fluoride discussion, citizens will have the opportunity to speak.
All right. I'll defer.
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to bring the commission up to date. Scott Verson said he was not going to be here tonight and sent me an email to that effect, but we are working with the city on doing an easement that will address the water issue. So that's in progress. Mr. Brooks, on behalf of Parkview, met with the federal government, and they've kind of given a tentative okay. They wanted a site plan and an actual sort of legal description so they know where it's going to go before they sign off. So the commission was good enough to move forward with that 2 weeks ago, and they gave you just a brief update on that. I don't know if Mr. Kane was going to do anything in addition to that, but that's the update on that issue.
Thank you, Kevin. Do we have anyone else that wishes to address the commission on a non-agenda item? Okay, we'll move forward with correspondence. I have none. Any of the commissioners have correspondence to share with?
No, Mayor.
No.
No? Okay. City managers report.
A few items to report. We have, since our last meeting, we had no significant Devil's Night or Halloween issues this year, other than the Ramblers beginning their postseason, regular season triumphs, which we hope that they'll be extending this Friday night on their home field. Congratulations on their becoming the district champions for the first time since 2001, and I hope they continue their magnificent season for some weeks to come. The three computers for City Hall that were recently approved, new computers that were recently approved by the City Commission were installed last week, and the old ones that are still serviceable are being prepared for reuse in other less computer-demanding offices and in locations like the marina and the airport terminal. Speaking of the airport terminal, the new roof at the terminal that was recently approved by the City Commission was installed last week. Also, 48 new trees were recently approved by the City Commission, well actually 42 of them, and then 6 that were replacement trees under warranty, have been planted around the city, and that work took place yesterday. So the commission approved 42, and we had 6 more under warranty. As Attorney Cleburne mentioned a couple of minutes ago, work on the Division Street water issue does continue. He mentioned about the easement language being prepared. We're also sending our backer truck out to verify the existing Parkview line's location and depth. So we can check that and make sure that that's prepared. And that ties in with the authorization I gave to C2AE to prepare the necessary plans and specifications so we can move forward with that work. Yesterday at the business park, we had the ribbon cutting for the new nature area that was worked on and developed by the Friends of the Boyne River. It was a great turnout at that event. They had a nice flyer to pass out as well, too, and it's a great resource that we can all be very proud of. Today we had a ribbon cutting for the East and Ray Street reconstruction project. We still have a little bit of work that remains to be done. The overhead wires behind the 100 block of Water Street remain to be switched over and then removed. We also have a couple signs that need to be installed around the project in the next week or so. And then we're waiting until next spring to plant the new grass and install the pavement markings. But the project is fully operational and up and running, and we had a real good turnout, despite the iffy weather for that as well, too. At least there wasn't as much snow as there was yesterday. Chief Gaither has brought for our viewing, and we have a sample shirt right up there behind him, the new patch design for our police department's uniform. These were developed by the department and will replace the old ones that the chief has on his existing uniform right now, that we've used for quite some time, and we've run out of. The total installed cost for the new patches is way less than $500, and that's available in the funds of the budget for the police department. As you may notice, the new logo uses our current logo and much more clearly defines our personnel as police officers and from Boyne City. I mean, I can actually read them from here, where you couldn't do that on the old patch as well. There's no commission action necessary, but Jeff's here to explain anything in case the commission has any questions with regards to that. And that's what I have for my commission update for today. If you have any questions on these or other items, please let me know. And then we have another item on the agenda to follow this.
Any questions from the commission? Derek?
Just follow up. Were the watering bags ordered now, or are we going to wait to procure them in the spring?
They've been ordered now, but with all the precipitation and with the cold weather, we don't see any reason to kind of give the trees a cold shoulder or a lump of ice around them.
No,
so we're probably not going to, they're on order, they should be arriving shortly.
Okay.
And then we'll see what the weather situation is in the spring before we actually deploy them.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there a time frame on the Division Street project?
No, there is not yet.
Okay.
Before winter is.
Before winter.
That's what we said.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, we're following up as quickly as we can with the cooperation that we're getting from Kevin Cleborn and the people that he's working with. Okay. Obviously, we have to prepare the specifications, get the documents ready so we can get all the work done, and we'll see what.
Okay.
Mother Nature brings forward to us, but we're moving pursuant to the commission's approval at the last meeting.
Thank you, Mike. Our next item of business is a special award, which is going to go to Chris Christensen, and it's from Connect Michigan. They've selected 10 honorees this year, and this is the 2014 Broadband Hero Award presentation. And to present this award tonight, we have Thomas Stevenson here, who is the Community Technology Advisor for Connect Michigan. And the award reads for Chris Christensen, Charlevoix County. In his capacity as County Commissioner, Chris uses his foresight, knowledge of current and future infrastructural and resource and connections to put Charlevoix County and rural northern Michigan in a strategic position for broadband expansion. Chris has propelled his vision forward by working with many local units of government, the local school district, public libraries, economic developers, the local hospital and medical facilities, the county and its many departments and boards, including emergency service, Merit Network, and many local internet providers. His participation and facilitation has led to increased understanding and awareness of high-speed internet connectivity, capacity, and needs in Charlevoix County. Chris, would you come forward? And Tom, would you come forward also?
Chris, this is the 2014 Broadband Hero Award, and given to you by Connect Michigan. Appreciate all the work you've done, and thank you. Your fellow teammates wrote that too. We didn't have to write anything at this.
That's great. I appreciate
Tom, hold that pulse for a second. 7-8 more minutes.
Let me show you how to use it, Jim.
Maybe we shut it off.
That's okay.
You can't let me do the whole thing.
I just wanted to thank Chris and the fellow members of the Charlevoix team. As you know, Charlevoix County, Connect Michigan, is currently working with over 50 communities, and as of this moment, I think 26 of them have received a plan. 10 of them have become certified. We've got a couple more that's worked their way up, and Charlevoix County was the first one to become certified. And you set a good example. I think you were actually the first in the nation.
Yes.
So out of over 200 communities that actually worked on it. And to date, right now, there's only 30 communities in the entire United States right now that's actually made the hit the certification status, with Charlevoix being the number one, first one. So you've done a good job, and very well, and hopefully we'll continue working together.
In your update for Ray Street, did you mention that you were working on conduit?
The conduit's already in.
See that?
Oh,
see that?
Hey, that's it. That's what you're going to have to do. That's what we need to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, our next item of business is reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. Today we have the draft minutes for the Main Street Board meeting, Parks and Recreation, Zoning Board of Appeal meetings, Planning Commission, Historic Commission, and Airport Board meeting. Do we have any questions from the commission?
No.
Everybody's good? Okay. Okay, we'll move on to unfinished business. First item is fluoride update, and I'll turn that over to Mike Payne for a summary.
Thank you, Mayor. Obviously, the election was held with regards to the fluoride issue. The results of the election are not that much different than what they were in 1973. Since the vote has taken place, we have basically been notified by the county clerk that our local election results have been certified by the Board of Canvasser, and that for all issues here, including the fluoride issue. We reviewed the results of the fluoride vote with our city attorney and see no obstacles to implementing the results and the objectives of that vote. We are advertising the new ordinance as approved by the voters, and that's consistent with the city charter. Our fluoride-related equipment that was taken out of service after the commission's May 13th meeting has been prepared to use, and the fluoride that has been ordered has been delivered. We're using basically the exact same product that we're using for the last 41 years. And then unless something changes, I mean, we could turn and flip the switch tomorrow and have the fluoride ready to go. But to follow the timelines that are spelled out in the charter, we're prepared to resume fluoridization consistent with the action as authorized by the charter and approved by the voters on Wednesday, November 19th. I did receive a request from Commissioner Gaylor to have fluoride on the agenda today. He raised some questions with regards to certification levels or of certain fluoride products. So it is on the agenda for today. There is no action required by the City Commission on this matter to implement the voters' determination. I'm treating this exactly the same way we did when the Commission voted on May 13th. We are proceeding with as authorized and directed by the Charter and approvals by the Commission as we did to take it out, to put it back in. So obviously if the Commission has some questions or comments or further actions for staff to consider, we'd be glad to entertain those and address them.
Thank you, Mike. Do we have any additional comments from staff or department heads? Okay, do we have any citizens' comments? Dr. Fish?
Yeah, Richard Fish. Seemed like I've been here at every commission meeting since. For those of you that might have been on another planet the last 6 months, 6 months ago, Commissioners Sampson, Derek Gaylord, and Gene Tom voted against overwhelmingly opposition to remove fluoride from the water. We came to them the next two meetings and asked them, actually we pled with them to reverse their action, and they declined to do so. And they said, well, if you feel that strongly about it, then get out a referendum petition, get it on the ballot. We retained over 700 signatures in less than 14 days, and it was on the ballot. The results of the election this last, Tuesday, overwhelmingly supported by a vote of 2-1, and as Michael Caine said, it was very similar to the election that took place in 73-74. I don't know what there is about the democratic process that the three of you don't understand. We've done the route, we've done it, we've done what you asked us to do, it's taken care of. I can tell you that the committee is still in existence, and if there's any part of the city commission that wants to delay, interfere, postpone the addition of fluoride to the water, this committee will do immediate and clearful action against that. We're not going to stand by and let it see. The people have spoken, and I think that you people need to get on with what you were elected to do. Not your own agenda, but you need to get on with what takes place in the city government. And I support your action, and the democratic process did work. And while we had to go through this, we all learned a lesson from it. So hopefully we won't ever hear about this again.
Thank you.
Ward Collins, 132 Silver Street. I likewise worked on the petition, and I was the one that was beating on doors and talking to people in their homes. And I think we obtained about 70 signatures in my neighborhood, and of all the people I talked to, only two declined to sign the petition. And but what the petition doesn't really say is the comments that were made to me about what in the world does a city commission think they're doing overturning the election or the vote of the people. Now, they voted once and then we voted again. And I think the people are going to feel even more strongly if you take any action to frustrate the effort to re-implement fluoride. And so I guess I'm just saying this, that there's a lot of people that are very nervous that the city commission can frustrate what the public has voted to do. So I think I would like to suggest that the city commission not make any efforts to frustrate the implementation of fluoride.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to address the commission? Yes, sir.
My name is Michael Biedekay. I live at 05929 Marvon Road, East Jordan, Michigan, which is actually in Wilson Township. And I am a concerned citizen of this community. I've handed you, the commissioners, a fraction of information that is available against artificial fluoridation. I'm hoping that this issue can be researched by this board to look a bit closer on what form of pollution will be added to the city's water supply. I believe this past election about adding fluoride, I mean, I'm not going to get this right either, hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is a waste product of fertilizer production, and when mixed with water becomes a low dose of a neurotoxic cocktail. This has been misleading. I believe the people of this community have been misled that this neurotoxin hydrofluorosilicic acid is safe and beneficial for children and not harmful to the ecosystem of our beautiful Lake Charlevoix. The practice of artificial fluoridation is the height of arrogance when one considers the overwhelming scientific evidence supporting this concern. I believe the information was incomplete and misleading. I also believe that given a chemical analysis and origin of this neurotoxic cocktail, it would have never been placed on the ballot. Traces of lead, barium, mercury, and radionuclides, and in studies have found 50% of the testing, there is also arsenic that makes up this cocktail that is being discussed. All is accumulative. And add this to the other sources of pollution in this area, one would logically realize this is not a good thing. Our clean water is vital to the health of not only us humans, but our whole ecosystem. With all the new information that is constantly being available, I would question the motive behind the need to pollute our drinking water. Please remember these are accumulative toxins. After years of consumption, they do not go away. In fact, they infiltrate every fiber of our body and can create known diseases. In closing, I implore this commission to look closer at all the facts before deciding to add a form of pollution to this water supply. Thank you.
Do we have anyone else that wishes to address the commission?
Ward Collins, 132 Silver Street again. I guess the only thing I'll say is hydrofluorosilicic acid.
No.
I'm not allowed to speak again?
No.
It's not normal that we allow it, so okay. Maybe we can just hold the comment, if you would.
Pardon?
Oh, hold it. Okay. Thank you. We're not getting into any debates tonight, whether it's... Dan
Leeds, the Water Wastewater Superintendent of Des Moines City. The voters approved the measure to reinstitute fluoride into the water system, and we have installed and set up the equipment. We've received the chemicals and it's ready to introduce. The chemicals we're required to put and use in the water system are NSF-approved chemicals. Whether you can pick a different chemical, there are a couple that we can use. But they have to be NSF approved. Then we have to look at whether we have the space to use them, the ability to do it safely and efficiently. And at this point, I don't think we do. We have fed the NSF approved hydrofluorosilicic acid for 40 years. It meets every standard that's required by the EPA and the state. It is tested for safety in public drinking water. And I would suggest we move forward. And if you'd like more information on what the NSF standard actually means, Brian's perfectly capable of explaining it.
Do we have anyone else that wishes to address the commission? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Leslie Nelson, and I reside at 119 Water Street. And a month ago, I didn't know anything about fluoride. And I have a degree in microbiology and public health from Michigan State University, and I was under the assumption that pharmaceutical-grade fluoride was being added to the system all over the United States. And I didn't know anything about fluoride, just was good for your teeth. And then I started doing some research, because when I got pulled out, people started asking me, what do you think about it? And I said, I'm kind of happy, but I didn't know why. I have two small children, 7 and 11. And so I thought, I better do some research. And with my science background, I was able to do quite a bit of research. And I was surprised that it is the source of 95% of the United States uses this waste. It's a toxic waste product, but because it can be used, they call it a byproduct. And I was surprised that the EPA, I don't know why they don't do their own chemical analysis, but they do have the National Sanitation Foundation doing the analysis for them. But 50% of all of the waste product, byproduct from the fertilizer industry does contain arsenic. And it also contains traces of other materials. And those are bioaccumulative, and those do build up in our system. And so a month ago, I was all happy, and now that I know what I know, I can't not know it. And on here, this says, vote yes for fluoride. It doesn't say vote yes for fluoride, arsenic, mercury, lead, radionucleotides. It doesn't say that. And all of our dentists and doctors will agree it's more effective when it's topically. And I don't know how many people have a science background, but fluoride, I mean, we're raised to think that fluoride is for our teeth. When I was little, I thought that cows, they just produced milk. I didn't realize that they had to get impregnated and their baby was taken away, and that's how we got milk. Didn't realize that. So the same thing, I just thought fluoride was for our teeth. But it's not. It affects our soft tissues. It affects our bones. When it goes into our body, when it's taken systemically, it is highly electronegative. It's the most electronegative element on the periodic table. And it competes with iodine for our thyroid. Thyroid cancer has doubled since the year 2000. I would challenge anyone to raise their hand that does not know somebody who has hypothyroidism, or thyroid cancer, or has an issue with their thyroid. You just mention it, oh yeah, I just got diagnosed with that. Oh yeah, I got that. What they treat, hyperthyroidism, which there isn't any, is fluoride. We have brought up all of these issues to the Citizens United for Dental Health, which they say, give us irrefutable proof. Give us irrefutable proof. Give us irrefutable proof that it doesn't cause damage. That's what I'm saying. I have a 7-year-old and an 11-year-old, and I hold every single member of the Citizens United for Dental Health. Dr. Breiser, I love Archright, but I don't know what he was thinking. Dick Fish, Kyle Van Domlin, and I don't know who the other guy is, but I hold him responsible. I feel that they are in the process of murdering my children. And I take this very seriously. And these doctors, I hold each one of them responsible too. None of them would talk to me. Nobody from the Citizens United for Dental Health would talk to me. And at this point in time, because this to me is medication into my children's water and myself, I think that if people have health issues or concerns, The city, if they want to implement this, they need to provide reverse osmosis, whole house filter systems for these citizens that do not want this. We pay our taxes, we pay for our water, we pay for clean, safe water. Doesn't matter that for 41 years. Anyway, I take this very seriously, and I would ask that you do too.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else that wishes to address the commission?
I guess I'll see some. My name's Mitchell Hike, and I live at 2456 Jakeway Road, a little bit outside of town. I don't drink fluoridated water. And I know that the people voted on this, but we had a really good debate with the water treatment guy from East Jordan, David, I forget his last name, nice guy, and Dr. Paul Connett, who's went around the world, a PhD chemist against fluoridated water. He came to our town and had a debate with the water treatment guy that puts it in East Jordan's water. And we put flyers out for it. There's a YouTube channel for it, Boyne City Fluoride Debate. And, you know, as upset as so many people are about this, and it's a big issue. I mean, I don't see why some people are so adamantly against questioning fluoride in the water. To me, it seems a lot like corporate science for asbestos. Corporate science, they used to say cigarettes were okay for you. They used to say Agent Orange wasn't going to hurt our soldiers. And, what was the other one? Bovine growth hormone that they put in the cows. Anyway, we had a debate. It's on YouTube, and nobody really, except for one lady, and I forget her name, from the dentist or the health community came and saw it. And it was a very good debate, and there were tons of people against adding fluoride to the water that showed up and listened to this, and nobody from the medical community in our town came and listened, and I don't know why. But on YouTube, you know, they commented about it, and we kept telling them, watch the whole debate, watch the whole debate. And, you know, I'm not sure if they did, and I really wish those in the medical community did, because if it's that important, they should have been involved. It's still on YouTube, though.
Dan?
I just have one additional comment that I want on the record. There's been a lot of talk about safety of the public water system. Our water is tested for over, Brian correct me, but over 170 different contaminants. It's tested on a regular basis, and in no area are we above any action limit. That's with the fluoride in the water. It is not contaminated, and it's not helpless.
Thank you, Dan. Do we have anyone else that wishes to address the commission?
Yes, I'll just elaborate a little bit. Brian Thurston with the Department of Quality, not a citizen of Boyne City. Just to mention a little bit, Dan referred to me on the NSF Standard 60 approval process that goes through there, which National Sanitation Laboratories, or NSF International, now they're called, and about four of the five other laboratories around the country do the third-party analysis of any chemical added to the water. And all chemicals added to water have to meet the same health standards, that they don't have other products within that water that's going to make it be detrimental to putting it in the water system. And so the criteria is that when you go to the maximum amount you can add of that chemical into the water, that no product can contain more than 20% of a MCL for all of those 170 some parameters that the Safe Drinking Water has as national primary standards. With the exception that if we're talking about fluoride, that the actual fluoride could go up to the level that would be considered the MCL of that. But anything else that's inside of that product has to make sure that it's going back, that it meets that standard. Those are third-party tested. Those are tested at every batch. Every chemical company that makes the fluoride and puts that back into the system, it is a byproduct from another process, but that product has to be tested to make sure it's assured to be in that standard. If you were so As Dan said, when you add this product, which is the same manufacturer, the same party that you're using for fluorosilic acid that you've been adding for many, many, many years, and if the arsenic, when the arsenic MCL went from 50 parts per billion down to 10 parts per billion, they still cannot exceed 20% or 2 parts per billion in that concentration when it's being added to your water. So there, anything could have a trace element. It's a mineral that's harvested out of a mining operation and the phosphate production, and also in the providing the hydrofluorosilic acid comes as part of that production. And so with that, it can get, it picks up other minerals, other things that are inside of there. It's not pure fluoride. We don't have it in there. Pure fluoride would be a little harder on the operators because of the way it's in that form. It can be a little more health handling with the operator. This is a concentrated form of fluoride. If you don't drink it in its concentrated form, of course, you're diluting it. The city currently will be diluting it at 1 to 49,500 parts. That's what they're going to be diluting of that solution. And so I just wanted to assure you that is there all of the testing, as Dan said. You guys take the complete metals test, which looks for every single one of the parameters that was mentioned on there, and you do not have detections on those parameters. You do have a little bit of natural occurring arsenic in your formation that can come up from time to time, but all of these tests are done at after all chemicals are added to the system. So that's the assurance, I guess, to give you guys that this is being tested. You guys continue to test it. If you want to test it more frequently, you can test it more frequently if you'd like.
Thank you, Brian.
Yep.
Do we have any further citizens' comments? Okay, we'll move to the commission for discussion. Start with Derek.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate the comments from everyone this evening. Obviously, apparently it's still a contentious issue in some minds, but the voters have spoken. We had an individual this evening address the commission and make a statement that basically if we interfere in any way, shape, or form, I don't recall anyone on this commission saying we're going to interfere with the implementation of fluoride. I'm not sure where that came from. Factually false. I'll state that right here, right now. in fact, Mr. Van Domlin was questioned by Commissioner Sansom at a meeting prior to the vote, and his comment was something to the effect of, I'm not saying what type of product has to be in the water, we're just saying the fluoridation level has to be at a certain level. So if there's any discussion moving forward, that's what the discussion will be. Not that we're not going to implement it, not that we're going to interfere and prevent it in any way. It is what it is. So I'm not sure where the drama came from that perspective. But with that being said, we are definitely going to look at the equipment we had in there, and if we need to invest in new equipment, the city manager had indicated in correspondence that new lab testing equipment was ordered, and I'm going to have Dan here in a second explain what new equipment is being added or acquired, why we didn't have before, why the need now, and is this to replace equipment or bring it up to proper standards of the equipment we already had. New means new to me, not a replacement. During this process, the information came out. There's two communities that come to my mind, Kalamazoo and Ann Arbor, require a certificate of analysis of every component that's in that hydrofluorosilicic acid. And it has to be identified, not just what the maximum could be, but what is actually in that component. My conversation and phone call to the city manager was merely that before we put whatever product we put back in, regardless of how we voted, it has to go back in based on the vote. I'm sorry, that's, if you're against it going back in, I empathize, but the voters have spoken, so it's going back in. But we're going to do everything we can to ensure that the product that we put in has the least potential for any byproduct or any additional impurities beyond what is required. Again, I go back to Mr. Van Domelen's own words that he didn't state, and he didn't, the wording was not drafted on the ordinance to say what had to be put in, just that the fluoridation level had to reach a certain level. So that's what was presented. I shared that with the city manager, and the overall testing is fine. But I think we need to do more as far as being absolutely sure that we are, what we're putting in, and I would challenge anybody to say, I don't want you to do the best you can on what you're putting back in to make sure that we're limiting any impurities beyond the actual fluoride. So that debate, while it may continue into the future through education, and I presume that will, for the time being, that is what is going to happen. And there are other, as Dan mentioned, there are other forms, one of which is NAF, sodium fluoride. And that is another product that, since I had spoke with the city manager, that I think we strongly need to look at as far as the type of fluoridation component. Mm-hmm. And if somebody says, well, that may be too expensive to switch equipment over or whatever, I am fully prepared to spend whatever it takes to make sure that the citizens, those almost 400 for sure, that didn't want it back in the water system, have something added to their water that's as minimal with the impurities that that we can legally do. So, as the city manager stated, through November 19th, up until then, there was no such thing as interfering in any way, shape, or form with the implementation of it. Contrary to what someone may feel, that is not an interference. Therefore, we have time to look at the actual product, the actual equipment, and the actual testing up until that point. Mayor, I'd like to ask Mr. Meads if you could articulate on the city manager's reference to new laboratory testing equipment.
Dan?
There was no new equipment that needed to be purchased. When the vote passed, I told the city manager that it would take 1 to 2 weeks to prepare and be ready to reintroduce fluoride into the system. It's a bit more difficult to turn it on correctly than it is to turn it off. I had to go through and get the equipment set up, make sure that it was working and functioning, and then go through all of the lab equipment. Basically, we use a lot of chemicals. I need to go back through them, make sure the lab dates haven't expired, order new supplies if and where necessary, and check the probes and make sure it's calibrated correctly. I am ordering another probe. It's a replacement. It's not new equipment. Okay. And I've got one scale that I have to fix. Basically, the electrical connection's bad. It'll be up and running tomorrow, both of them.
I could follow up on what you just stated on the scale, the electrical connection is bad. How long has that electrical connection been bad, to the best of your knowledge?
It was working when I took it out.
What would change just by not being hooked up?
6 months of storage, corrosion, terminal was loose. Okay. It's just a loose contact. I need to replace the contact.
So basically, you're just going through, you're not adding new equipment. You're bringing what you were using previously
up to standard.
Up to standard. Okay. Fair enough. What about the actual dispensation equipment that the product is injected into the water system with? That was disconnected. How are you, what is the components or the mechanism? You said hook it back up. Hook what? How long has that equipment been in use prior to you hooking it back up?
The chemical leach equipment basically consists of a scale, a day tank, a chemical pump, some plastic tubing, an injector, and check valves. They were cleaned, put in storage, they're put back in the wells, and they're ready to go.
Okay, do we have any standard or mechanism to verify that equipment's still within operating dimensions and specifications and...
A check valve works it either works or it doesn't. The water runs backward because you've got a pressurized water system. The scales weigh to a tenth of a pound.
Okay.
We are pumping water through the scales and through the pumps right now, verifying that they weigh, that they actually pump, and that they're working.
Okay. Since the hydrofluorosilicic acid has been removed, can you tell me what our current arsenic level is, which would be the true natural arsenic level in our water system?
The last test that we required run was on 8/30/11, and it was non-detectable.
Okay, so we haven't tested it since the hydrofluorosilicic acid has been removed.
Couldn't go any lower than non-detectable.
Okay. Is there a possibility that we get another baseline before resuming whatever product we use?
Zero is zero.
That wasn't my question. I understand what zero means.
I can run a test if you'd like to.
Okay. That was all my question was.
It's zero.
In what year? 2011?
It was in August of 11 was the last time we ran.
August 11th of 2014?
August of 2011.
Okay, so 3 years ago. That's what I thought you said.
Every test out of the 170 tests I ran annually.
Okay.
There's a test that is basically based on how frequently the DEQC's parameters change. That range from yearly tests to radiologicals, like once every 15 years or 10 years. And we test on schedule as they require.
When was that next arsenic test up? Due up?
I'd have to look at the parameters.
Mayor, if I could direct that question to Brian Thurston, please.
Sure. Brian? 1 in 9 year frequency right now.
I'm sorry, every 9 years?
Every 9 years frequency on there, because you've tested. When they do, it's on a 1 in 3 year frequency, and then after we get 3 consecutive rounds of very low to non-detect, in this case they've all been non-detect, then it was reduced to a frequency of 1 every 9. The city can put an arsenic frequency above that if anything they want at any time. Mm-hmm. Certain communities do, but 1 in 9 is the requirement of the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act and Michigan Safe Drinking Water Act.
Okay. If that was to be done now, would we still be back on the 9 schedule if we did one right now?
It would actually just extend
it out.
That back out. Well, it's actually a full set of what's called complete metals, is what does the test, which is going to have arsenic in it, it's going to have mercury, and it's going to have cadmium, it's going to have chromium, it's going to have a bunch of different things that are going to be inside.
Sure.
Or you can run arsenic as its own independent, or any of the metals, it's an independent, you can use any laboratory that is certified by the state.
Okay. Well, I think if there's no issues, I think a baseline would be prudent in this matter. Therefore, if anybody has any questions, that we could always revert back and say, here's what it was with just the natural, nothing added. So, thank you for that. Mayor, if I could have Brian Thurston explain what does the acronym MCL mean, and what does that apply to?
Previous question, I want to clarify.
Yes.
Can you clarify where you want to test it? Right now, a test, the requirements are by point of entry into the distribution system.
Where do you normally draw from when you do test it?
Point of entry after all chemicals are added, but if you wanted to know what the baseline of every single well is, that would be a different, you'd go back to the well itself. There wouldn't be a compliance point, but you could go back and sample, because you may have a well that has some natural occurring arsenic.
Sure.
In some levels, and some other wells don't have it, and when they blend together, it may be still not detected, but if you test each individual well, you may actually find that you have a source of arsenic in one particular well.
Okay.
So please clarify to Dan what you want to test.
I would think that each individual well would be the appropriate way to go. Yeah, just like you, it was referenced in the beginning of this process that there's natural occurring fluoride. I believe the north well, if I'm not mistaken, has less natural occurring fluoride than the south well. Was it the other way around? Okay. Thank you.
1.8 to 0.2 in the south side, between 0.3 and 0.4.
Okay.
And again, Dan's equipment is, he uses the same type of equipment that most laboratories that do the certification analysis, he's doing that same type of stuff, but his lab is not certified to do that analysis. So if you, again, want to have any, you know, certified, we do those, the fluoride analysis is done once per year, but again, it's at that point of entry, not testing each individual source. So if you wanted it to test each individual source, that would be different, that would be part of the compliance monitoring.
Okay. The I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the way the new ordinance reads is monthly testing for fluoride levels. So we'll be going to a 12 time a year testing, the way the ordinance reads.
He does a daily analysis.
But we do daily analysis at least 5 days a week.
Okay.
It's reported as a monthly average.
Okay. And then at what point would trigger a notification of exceeding that? And at what point do you, how many times prior to the removal of it did you go and make adjustments? Each day did you tweak the amount going into the system of the hydrofluorosilicic acid?
Very rarely.
Very rarely that you had to?
Very rarely does it need adjusting. You set the chemical pumps up to match the flow rate from the wells. And they start when the well starts, they shut off when the well shuts off. Once it's set, the only reason it changes with fluoride, it's a fairly stable chemical. It doesn't change unless the injector begins to plug, then it will go down. It doesn't go up.
Right.
With chlorine, you might have to adjust it up. That's not on a regular basis. But as chlorine ages, it can get weaker than when you purchased it. So if it's not as strong, when you draw it out of the next barrel, we may have to adjust it a bit.
Okay. At what point, if it's based on the flow rate or the naturally occurring rate of natural fluoride, then you base the ratio off of that. How often do you check the natural fluoride levels prior to the injection to ensure that that ratio is still in
the
balance?
Natural background fluoride, the raw water from the wells, we check once a week.
Okay.
We check the output, complete water, daily.
Okay, so that was my question. Weekly, you test the natural to make sure that the ratio is still in effect, correct?
Natural groundwater levels aren't going to change. They're basically constant. We test basically the same, up or down a tenth. It hasn't gone up or down more than that in 30 years, as long as we've been testing. We dose based on how much we have to add to that, and our dosage rate would be about a 0.5 parts per million on the south side, and a 0.2 to 0.3 parts per million on the north side, or 200 parts per billion.
Right. To get to the 0.7. And the process would be the same whether it's hydrofluorosilicic acid or NAF, so to speak.
It depends, and it would depend on the chemical and what processes we had to set up. I'd have to look into them, evaluate them, see if we had enough room.
Perhaps Brian could address that question.
Sure.
If we went to an NAF versus...
If you go to an NAF, sodium fluoride comes in the form of powder.
Right.
It is a very much an operator hazard. So one of our concerns would be for Dan and his crew. because it's almost like a talcum powder that comes out of the bag, very dusty. It cannot be the powder you don't want to get on your skin or inhale at all, because again, it is very strong in the powder form. When we work with an acid, when you work with the acid on there, it basically is a, if you use protection from getting splash type stuff that goes back, this, the issue of the powder is that when I go to add that into the solution tank, it's called a saturator, and you don't have one of those, you'd have to buy one of those. Mm-hmm. But a saturator, when you go to put it in that saturator, you have to put it in very carefully, very slowly. It has to be taken out of the bag with extreme caution, because again, if you were to have a bag open or get there sweeping it up or something, could put the exposure to the operators at risk. It is, from an operation standpoint, it is probably much more risky of a chemical to add to your system than what it would be to deal with something that's a liquid that the worst you have is a splash hazard that comes out to there, and the caustic nature of the mm-hmm. splash, because it's in a concentrated form. But in the powder, it has both the inhalation, and also if you get that dust on your clothes, what do you do with your clothes now? You know, what are you going to do with that type of stuff? They have to meet the same standards. They still have to meet the NSF standard 60, which is the same exact requirements and the same exact subcomponents could be inside of there, no matter what chemical you use, whether you use sodium fluorosilicate, sodium fluoride, or fluorosilic acid. They're all going to have the same standard.
Is there?
I just want to add on to that. That's basically what I was getting at when I said I'd have to evaluate it. Mm-hmm. Basically, a saturation tank, flocculation or mixing equipment to keep it in solution, ventilation in chemical feed areas that we have. I don't think we have the room in our existing well houses to house that type of equipment and operate it safely. It would potentially cause a need to put additions on each of the well houses in order to feed that type of chemical. And it's normally purchased by larger cities in bulk, and I don't know if our suppliers ship small quantities up here.
Now you're talking about the sodium chloride.
Typically, it's a water plants, large water plants that are going to use a high amount of it, where they're going to get a bulk shipment by a semi-load of chlorosilic acid, or they're going to get basically pallets of this sodium chloride.
The AWWA composition different than the powder form? Are you familiar with that? They're more of a crystalline nature that doesn't have the dust exposure. And does that still meet the NSF standard 60?
I'm not familiar with when I've seen sodium fluoride, my experience with it is what like the City of Mount Pleasant feeds into their system. The City of Mount Pleasant uses sodium fluoride, and that sodium fluoride is a very, very dusty mm-hmm. type of a product. They all have to wear respirations. They basically have to lock down the room afterwards to not have workers come in and out from that side there. If they do get a spill onto the floor of that, it's got to be very carefully handled and cleaned up. That's a lot of work to do, whereas the current substance that you're putting in, basically, in the worst case, you have to neutralize the acid.
So there's no other three accepted in the United States other than those three chemicals?
Those are the only three that I'm aware of that is in the market.
Can I say something about the chemistry of these materials?
Yes, go ahead.
Fluorosilicic acid is a very unstable acid. The minute it's diluted with a large volume of water or any volume of water at all, it immediately decomposes to hydrogen fluoride and silica. And you introduce hydrogen fluoride in our water, and it's going to become a salt very quickly because of all the minerals in our water. And if you put sodium fluoride in or hydrogen fluoride in, by the time it gets into the water system, it's all going to re-equilibrate, and it's going to be the same regardless of how you put it in, either as sodium fluoride or fluorosilicic acid. By the way, hydrofluorosilicic acid and silicic acid are the same compound. It's just two different names, or one's a shorthand for the other. But it really doesn't matter how you put it in. It's going to end up being the same because of all the minerals in the water. It's going to be a salt of calcium, magnesium, sodium, and all the minerals in our water, which are naturally in our water.
Thank you, Ward. Derek?
Now that I've been interrupted.
Well, this gentleman is a chemist and had about 40
with all due respect, Mayor, I didn't call on him for a comment.
It's okay. I did, so go ahead.
He interrupted me. I have the floor.
Actually, the chairman of the meeting has the floor, and he assigns it to the commissioners to speak as the proper term. So unless the commission as a group takes an action, the mayor is the chairman of the meeting.
May I have a comment, Mr. Mayor?
Certainly.
to simplify this, where you're going.
Right.
I would ask, from day one, in this whole debate, I said, let's trust the experts. Now I'm calling on Brian and Dan as our experts, and here's I think the simple question to what Dan is what Derek is getting to. Are we delivering the safest product in the safest manner? And that's basically what we want. Are we in the safest product? I don't care about cost. I'm talking about safe and the safest implementation process.
The chemicals we've been using are the most cost effective, the safest chemicals we can get at that rate and meet every state requirement. Can you spend more money? Yeah, you can if you want to. The commission has charged me for 30 years to keep costs as low as we can. We want to put on additions, change procedures and everything else. You're not going to get a chemical that isn't NSF certified, and any other chemical you can get can still have contaminants in it. It's a question of degree. The water is tested, and we have not exceeded any standards or levels. The chemicals we use can't bring enough into the system to cause us to exceed any safety standard.
Thank you. Could I ask Brian if he has any follow-up comments on that?
Sure. The question on safety, when anytime you have a chemical that is in a higher concentration form, there is always a higher risk that you could potentially have an overfeed. That's why we want to size pumps and stuff accordingly. So when sometime in the sodium fluoride puts it into a saturator, and this percent of the solution is 4%, versus the fluorosilic acid has a percent solution of 19.8% fluoride. And that is where some people look at that as a safety, because a 4%, if I overfed a 4%, I would have, it would be safer than overfeeding a 19% solution. You could cut your 19% solution down to any level you wanted to. But what I look at safety, I look at it from the whole part of the safety of the operation safety and stuff. I think the fluorosilic acid is the best product to use for small communities because it has the most operation safety that you can have into the system to be able to put in there. If you get into larger communities that have different processes and have more larger rooms that they can do this stuff in, there are some mechanical processes that would make putting sodium fluoride just as equivalently safe. But with a small community like this, it would be difficult. You would be opening large bags. You couldn't put that whole bag into the saturator. You could only you'd have a very small saturator, so you'd be putting just a small amount, and then you'd have a bag that's open. That bag that's open, if somebody bumps it, knocks it over, something there, it's going to add dust to the environment of that room. And that would be, and then if somebody sweeping up could be exposed to things. We don't have that level of hazard with fluorosilic acid. So I think the fluorosilic acid is for the type of operation, knowing what you got in the well house and stuff, it is the safest way to put it in your system.
And if I could have a follow-up question, Mr. Mayor. And this hydrofluorosic acid is a byproduct from the fertilizer industry. Can you address that topic? Because it's out there. We might as well address it from an expert.
When you mine minerals out of the ground, minerals are used for multiple things. Anytime you use you take the mineral out of a ground and you're going to use it, such as in the phosphate fertilizer industry, because that's the bigger of the two. There's not really a fluoride industry as much as there's a phosphate fertilizer industry. As they extract the phosphate from the rock, they have other side streams. And any of those side streams are called byproducts. There's probably 100 side streams of things that they go off from the side. We're in a recycling world. We don't get rid of everything. We don't dispose of it. We don't want people to go dump something on the ground or put it back into a hole if they'd have to treat it or do something else that goes in there. So there's all these byproducts. And like I said, there's probably 100 byproducts from the phosphate production, the fertilizer. And as they concentrate back in, then they're going to take those side streams and they're going to purify it to what the standards are, needing to purify it to sell it off as another product. If I was doing fluorosilic acid and I was not selling it to the drinking water industry, it's going to have a lot more contaminants in it because I just want to etch glass with it. I just want to do these other parts of the industrial. I want to clean marble with it. It's very good cleaner and frost glass if I'm doing those kind of things, and I won't have to treat it from those. If I'm going to send it to the drinking water, then I have to test and certify and treat and purify it to the NSF standard 60 to make sure it meets that standard. And again, not only that the company or the laboratory that does that work and they do their own test, they also have to have a third-party laboratory that comes and takes random samples, checks, and certifies that they're meeting those same standards. And that's where that NSF International is one of those laboratories, United UL Laboratories. You see that on all your devices here. You'll see tested by UL Laboratories. The same thing. They're all third-party certification laboratories across the country that test those.
So if we went to a process of one more step of certification, a certified analysis fluoride, is that redundant?
It's not going to tell you that the water's in or that the product is any safer. I'm not sure what you're going to do with that analysis. I don't know who you're comparing with. Are you going to go solicit a bunch of vendors and then have them all give you this analysis and then you're going to pick? Because there's going to be another batch down the road by the time you get that analysis back. So not really sure what you're going to have. You'll know what goes in the water, maybe, but I'm not sure what else you would use that for. Not sure what the purpose of having that information in your file is. And I don't know that the communities that do it really know what the purpose is other than they decided that that's what they're going to do.
We buy fluoride or hydrofluorosilicic acid in small batches. Normally I buy 2 to 4 barrels at a time. When I get a barrel, or I get a truckload up here with chlorine and fluoride, I may have barrels from 2 or 3 different lots. Each lot has to be certified, and you'd have to have individual analysis on each one.
And also in that certification, I'm not an expert at what laboratory you would send that certification to, because this is concentrated stuff, and you would have to go through some process of much dilution in order to go. Typically, if somebody was to certify an analysis, you would take it to maybe what the level was that you were going to put in the water, and then you would test your water. And at a drinking water certified laboratory, which is going to test levels at a very, very low level, but if I just send it off to another company that says I run, lead analysis, well, there's 100 different methods out there that you can run, and each one of them has a different level that they would detect to and what they're going to go. And if you're talking about testing a very strong substance, the detection level is not going to be very high. And that's why a lot of the analysis I've seen have a less than some pretty good size number.
Mr. Mayor, I know that Laura hasn't spoken, and I know Jared may have some more comments, but I can kind of conclude my statement is that this discussion tonight, it is probably beneficial, but it's also, this is not an action item before us, and the people have spoken very loudly and clearly, and I am back to my original statement from 3 months ago that I trust the experts, and I trust that our city manager will oversee Dan, and Dan will follow all his regulations that need to follow, and we will implement this in the safest process. And you know, I think it's time to say yes. Let's trust our people to implement this as the vote stated.
The open discussion is closed on that. Laura, did you?
Yeah, I have a couple of things. First of all, if I may, through to Dan, what is the age of our existing equipment? Does that go back to 73?
No.
Okay. Do you know how old it is, or when that was implemented?
Every year we budget between $15,000 and $25,000 for equipment maintenance. Chemical pumps generally have a 2 to 5 year life cycle.
Okay, so we're not dealing with the original.
Scales are about the same. Okay. They live in a, if you've ever been in one of the well houses, they're wet, they're damp. Mm-hmm. We're pumping corrosive acids. Things don't last in there forever. Okay. The equipment has a life cycle and it gets replaced on a regular basis.
Okay.
Usually in the years, but yeah, there isn't any equipment up there that's more than 5 to 10 years old.
Okay. I think everybody probably in this room knows that I'm very opposed to fluoridating our water. I was really disappointed with seeing how the vote turned out, but having said that, the voters voted, and that's the way it is. I would like to see the voters get what they voted for, and they voted for fluoride, pure and simple. All of the mailers, all of the ads, all said, vote yes for fluoride. Did not say vote yes for hydrofluoric acid. And that is a substance to me that is something way less than fluoride. It's 20% or less fluoride solution in that. It has arsenic, lead, mercury, aluminum, chromium, uranium, radium, everything else under the sun in there. And you might say they're safe levels. They're safe levels for a short time, maybe. But over 40 years, 50 years, 60 years of ingesting these heavy metals, they accumulate in the system. And we're not talking about, you know, drinking it. You could probably drink it for quite a few years before you have any health effects. But maybe down the road, maybe 20 years or 30 years, you will see, you know, different kinds of health issues resulting from those accumulations. They do build up in your system. You retain 40, 50, up to 70% in children on lead and mercury and arsenic. Okay, those three are really big ones. And so when you're talking about trace amounts that are safe levels now, that might not be true down the road. And so I'm looking at the future of children in our generation going forward. I think the voters voted for fluoride. I think they ought to get the purest form of fluoride there is, pharmaceutical grade fluoride. If we can provide it, that's what they should get. We shouldn't have to worry about the other substances in that mix. Let's not add to that problem. Let's honor what they voted for. They wanted fluoride, they got fluoride. And I think that's what we should do. I know it's going to be costly. I know it's going to cost more in equipment and space and all of that stuff, but I think we need to work that out. And other than that, we should have specifically said, and I said before, a few meetings back or before the vote, I think the consumer and the public have been misled in the past. I didn't know it was hydrofluorosilicic acid until I asked the question. In 41 years, they've been using that, and I sat there and I sat bolt upright when Dan said what it was. I said, what in the world is that? Because I thought it was fluoride, and I think the whole world thinks it's fluoride, and it's not. So that, for me, is deceiving to the public, misleading and deceiving in that respect. And that's how I feel about it. So whatever we can do. I ran across a statement, and I want to read this because I just found this fascinating. It is from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, March in 1983. And this is a real giving statement. It really truly says where this hydrofluorosilicic acid, how that all got started. A statement from a doctor who wrote to the EPA asking if fluoridation was safe and what was being used. And it says, in regards to the use of fluorosilicic acid as a source of fluoride for fluoridation, This agency, which is the EPA, regards such use as an ideal environmental solution to a longstanding problem. By recovering byproduct fluorosilic acid from fertilizer manufacturing, water and air pollution are minimized. That's exactly the reason for using it. So that's one of my statements. Let's see. I think Derek went over a bunch of other things. So that's where I stand on the issue of fluoridation. I understand the vote's the vote. Not much we can do about it now at this point in time, but let's do the best we can to provide the voters with what they voted for.
Do you wish to speak to the, or have any more questions?
Yes, Mayor, thank you. Dan didn't quite answer Commissioner Nienhammer's question directly, so I'll repose it, and that is the hydrofluorosilicic acid the absolute safest product for consumption that we can put into the municipal water system of Boyne City?
It's as safe as any other that I am aware of, measured by the standards that I have to follow.
That didn't answer the question.
That's as close as you're going to get.
That's telling.
I can't tell you there's not a safer chemical out there. I can buy laboratory quality chemicals if you want to.
Right.
But they're about $100 for a bottle, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Any further questions?
Commissioner Sansom pointed out that she was correct. The citizen voted for fluoride. That's it. Nothing else. The individual referenced Mr. Van Domelen said he didn't care what was in there, right, as long as the fluoridation levels reached that level. That wasn't up to him. So when you combine the two, it doesn't sound like hydrofluorosilicic acid fits into that parameter based on that information and Commissioner Sansom's point. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, this is a discussion tonight. And there is no motion considered.
Not yet.
Personally, I trust the experts, trust the doctors, and charge our staff, and particularly Dan and his crew, to put the safest product in the safest way that fits our needs. And so that's all I've got to say. Any further discussion?
I would like to say that we have a choice of other options as determined by the City Commission on this part of our agenda.
Do you have an option you want to present?
The option would be to provide sodium fluoride to the water system for fluoridation.
Mike?
This is a real interesting discussion that we've been having for quite some time here. I look back at the goals that the City Commission adopted at our last meeting, two meetings ago, and I'm trying to figure out where this fits in that process. It's been said multiple times that the public has spoken, and I think it has, same way they did in 1973. I think we have an informed electorate, renew the topic, as well or better than most topics that people go to the polls and vote on. I think they heard all about fluorosilicic acid. I think they heard about fluoride. They knew what they were voting on, and the vote has taken place. Right now, I'm seeing something that's happening in Boyne City I'm not too pleased with. It's a distraction from the business of this community with regards to what's going on. It is not consistent with any of the goals or processes that we have. And what I'm seeing with regards to the conversations that are taking place are probably more toxic than anything that we're talking about putting into the water. Boyne City can focus down and be the fluoride microscopic community if that's what it chooses. And that's ultimately for the City Commission to choose if that's the direction it wishes to go. But that is not the direction that we have gone and prospered on in the last 12 or 15 years.
It is not what we have done to become a great community and to make lots of progress. So we want to micromanage and try and continue to score points on this issue. We can do that, but this community will be a lot worse off than we are currently. I have a master's in public administration from Michigan State University. I know I'm not an expert on all the things. I rely on the experts that have probably advanced degrees in this matter to speak to information on it. Everybody had the opportunity to get any information that they wanted prior to the election. My job is as a public administrator is to make sure that the laws and procedures and the information that comes before the city commission is the best that you have to make decisions upon. What the commission does with it and how it directs the staff is up to them. But I think it's important for this commission to keep this all in perspective and to not further divide this community or to take other steps that I think could happen next. And I'd really hate to see those happen in this community. There's been talk of recall. There's been talks of all sorts of things that will tear this community apart. And we watch other communities do that to themselves not too far from here in the last, during my tenure here. And if that's the path that the commission chooses to go down, that's something that can happen. As your administrator, as your public professional, charged with running a government that is safe and effective for all the citizens of Boyne City, consistent with their elected wishes, consistent with the charter of this community, as approved by the state of Michigan, I don't recommend that. I think the public has spoken. We have the processes that were safe and effective for 41 years. You have the water system quality reports that are issued every year that talk about non-detectable levels of arsenic, very low levels of lead, way below any standards. And you can go be chasing some imaginary zero percentage all you want, and we can spend money to do it. But as has been mentioned before, what's the gain? I don't see it. Dan's talked to you with regards to running an effective, efficient government. And that's what the staff here tries to do very hard all the time, per the direction of the commission. And it's true, we can spend all the money that we want on fluoride or any other issue, but is that going to make us a better community? I don't think so. We have lots of other goals on there. We have buildings we want to build, roads we want to pave, and to chase something that I think the science has clearly demonstrated we're well within standards. I mean, I would love, there's communities all across the state that would like to see arsenic levels as low as we have here with the fluoride in. So my recommendation is that the staff be allowed to proceed as the informed public voted upon, as they voted upon in 1973, as many of the communities across this country vote upon. The issues that were brought up with regards to the combining effect of the chemicals over periods of years, I'm sure are being researched by people much more intelligent on this topic than I am, that are looking at those same factors, not just what 1 year of digestion of these products does, or bathing in it, or whatever you do with it. They're looking at the cumulative effects as well, too. And I think to say that they don't, or that somehow that these levels that are come up with are just imaginary, pulled out of the figure to try and diminish them in some respect, is unfortunate. So everybody's entitled to their opinion. I've given you mine before. My job is to advise the city commission. There is no action, as I mentioned in the commission, my memo to the commission, that's taken on this. If the commission desires to give additional direction to the staff, we'll do our best job to implement it. So
thank you, Mike. Any further discussion? Derek?
Thank you. Just to follow up to the city manager, I used the reference questioning the numbers. I never questioned the numbers on the water quality report at all. My question was to you initially, and perhaps Mr. Thurston can concur or deny the process that the cities of Ann Arbor and Kalamazoo use for their certified analysis, which goes beyond the standard level that was accepted when Mosaic sends their product out. That's where my first question started. And again, as I said earlier, how is that wrong to verify that we're ensuring that if there's two batches and we can say one meets a lower level of the other stuff, that we shouldn't pick one with the lower level because of that certified analysis? To me, that's common sense logic. It has nothing to do with wanting to tear this community apart or return the wishes of people. Again, that's hyperbole, but it's not based on what was said here tonight. So, again, I go back, if Mr. Thurston can answer that, on those two communities in particular. Are you familiar with them?
Yes.
And their process?
Yes.
Okay. Could you articulate to what the process they go through and how that affects what product, which batch of products of that chemical get added to their water system?
The certificate of analysis is instituted based on a security measure.
Okay.
Because they receive things in a bulk shipment.
Yep.
They receive it by an entire semi-load, travels across the country. They want an analysis of that once it got back to their facility. And they those were put in based on security protocols of what we're getting and how we're accepting. Because once it gets to the facility, they retest that at the facility. So when they offload the semi onto the bulk tanks, Ann Arbor retests that again to make sure they have received exactly what the chemical vendor sent them, and without knowing the exact makeup of what that was on the chemical when it was shipped from the plant, they can't do that analysis on the other end to make sure that nothing had happened or tampered.
Okay.
Sure. Since then, NSF has put in, NSF Standard 60 has put protocols in where your drums are sealed. The drums, when you, on small equipment, your stuff has a tag on each drum, it's been sealed. That dealt with that process versus when you bought it before in bulk shipments, there wasn't that kind of certification or sealing of it.
Okay.
Now they actually tag and seal all of the tankers as they come back across. But again, it was placed in as a security measure, and I believe Kalamazoo put it in for the exact same reason as a security measure.
They receive theirs in a bulk submission
yes.
as well.
Yes, okay. They do not receive it in barrel form like you guys that are coming sealed from the factory.
Okay. If we got that answer at the beginning of this conversation, it probably would have been shorter. That makes logical sense. They want to verify that nothing was added or changed from when it left the factory.
Well, and the concern was, the concern by the communities
sure.
have been, is that the truck stops somewhere along the way and offloads 10% of the volume of the truck and dilutes it down with water, and they get something that they didn't pay for. And that had, there was a case where somebody had, the truck driver was actually selling fluoride off the side. And that's what made
a roadside stand?
So, no, I don't think at a roadside stand.
Okay.
Maybe to somebody who does craft work or something.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that information. That's
yep.
that logically, and if there's a mechanism in place that that it's verified that has not been tampered with when it left the manufacturer through Haviland to us, and they give a breakdown when it leaves with that batch. Each batch does come with its own analysis already, correct?
The batch comes, when you get it, it tells you that it met that standard.
They so it doesn't break it down.
They actually do a full analysis,
okay.
but they don't provide that information through the entire tracking. When they purchase it from chemical company over here,
right,
and they receive that over here, they do it as a security measure. They do, the analysis to make sure nothing was added or changed from that shipment. And they have that information there, and then it is broke out into different batches. The batch numbers that go, how the barrels got washed, all of the packaging, repackaging of the system. Every time I change the, if I put a different lot in of barrels that got rewashed back out from the side and cleaned before I refill those barrels, mm-hmm. that becomes, gets a new batch number placed onto it. They randomly select samples throughout that batch system to make sure they still meet the standard and run the analysis. But most places, what they do is they run analysis. Like I said, you can dilute this thing way down here to like where you put it in, and they may do that once within their system. But what they're going to do is they're going to do through, you can set your equipment to make sure that you're not exceeding a level. And usually the laboratory goes for like 10% of what they could put in there, and make sure they're below anything that would be of a 10% value. So even though NSF standard requires that you can't have 20% of a its maximum contaminant
right.
level.
Right.
That was okay, the question you had asked earlier.
Thank you.
Any company is going to test down to at least 10% of that to make sure they really don't have anything that there isn't it. Because the same thing, if I'm a company that's selling this out for a public water supply, that company does not want to sell you products that has these other trace contaminants. If they have there, they're going to switch vendors, they're going to deny the shipment on the front, and they're going to give you the best product they can get. Okay.
And could we get those, like from Havilland, when they receive the analysis, can that we request that be forwarded on so we have those documents available?
You would have to ask them, but okay. I don't know if they want, it's all internal, because again, they may not mm-hmm. be as Dan is. Here, he tested under the same standard method, but they may not have paid somebody to be the certified laboratory for that, because they're an industrial laboratory process that goes through there, and so they may not want to give their internal results back out. Mm-hmm. But that would be a question to where it's, you could ask, as again, we can sample anything, mm-hmm. or you can have it sent, but it really doesn't make sense to your system until you get it to the concentrations where you're actually putting it in the water or close to that, you know, to where you could really get what the value is. Otherwise, it's a pretty gross test. Even the certificate analysis right. that I've seen mm-hmm. is like less than 50 parts per million. Well, that's pretty much what the NSF standard doesn't even allow that much in there. I mean, these analysis mm-hmm. don't sometimes even match the standard. They're not even detecting down to the level of the NSF standard 60, what that standard is.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm all set.
Can you clarify one thing? How often does the NSF test that product
for
analysis?
Every batch that comes in has to be tested by the companies.
Okay.
So when they receive and they repackage, they have to provide that and have their books of all that laboratory procedure that is reviewed by NSF quarterly. And then once they get a rapport with that company, they may have a different graduated, but it starts at a quarterly schedule. NSF takes the raw samples from factory that's coming in, intercepts that raw sample that comes, and then they as it gets repackaged to the barrel, takes several samples from different barrel units, because the primary thing that can lead into contamination is these actual reusing and rewashing of these barrels. And so they got to make sure that they have a clean. They have to rewash and then run samples through there to make sure no carryover is occurring of any chemicals, that somebody didn't do something dumb like put some chemical inside of that barrel before they shipped it back. And so they do test any of that, and if they do, all those barrels have to be destroyed, and they basically go back on the side and have to go back with different barrels if they find that they have any contaminants in those.
Okay.
And that standard 60 process does all of the repackaging, includes the full repackaging process all the way to delivery to here.
Okay. And maybe I was under the impression that they don't purify the product, they just take it out of their holding pond, put it in a barrel, and ship it. But you made the statement earlier that they do purify it.
The chemical, the product that is the byproduct mm-hmm. purchased goes to a chemical company. That chemical company takes off and separates it again to many streams. One of those is the drinking into a drinking water stream. It has to be, if needed, I guess it could potentially, I don't think it would meet the standard if it was raw kept, brought over to the system. So it's typically all of them come mm-hmm. through one of the web chemical or one of the chemical companies, and any of those things are purified to what they're selling that product is.
What chemical company do you know of that does that? Because everything that I've read says it doesn't do that. That you just take that raw chemical from the phosphate fertilizer industry and barrel it. That's all I've ever read.
Chemical companies, and I think Webb is one of those chemical companies that, that I'm familiar with there,
okay,
down in, I think, the Ohio area. They bulk purchase the stuff on, like, railroad cars of things, and then they go through and separate it based on what the items are, and they may concentrate or purify. They may have one batch that meets a standard, another one that doesn't, so that goes off to a marble etching company, where it goes off to something else, because it is used in the glass industry, it's used in a lot of different industries that can be divided out from the side of there. But my communication with Webb is that they purify what goes in what their side, that's the drinking water side, they go through and either reject the batch or purify the batch to meet what it needs to be in the drinking water side.
See, I never understood that at all, because it's never been relayed that way from any sources that I've had or talked with anyone about that who should know.
Yeah, so, and a lot of the chemical companies, you know, I don't know, they're out there, they're telling you where it is. When I've contacted the chemical company, that's what they've told me. They test the batches, they purify them for the drinking water, or they would reject it if it didn't meet a standard for drinking water. They reject it and send it to a different stream that they would have within their chemical processing.
Do we know where ours is? I mean, where ours comes from and where it gets separated out? Like, which company?
I get it from Haviland Chemical. They're a state certified.
Okay, and they're the ones who then separate out the different...
They probably get their chemical from Webb or somebody else.
Okay.
Yeah, they probably have curious. A contract from multiple vendors across the United States that they would purchase for where it is, and they may get different shipments probably based on prices and where it comes back in the market. But they're going to do that analysis. Much of what you guys are asking, analysis, Haviland's doing that analysis. I'm not sure Haviland is, because of the certain people that have, people that have contacted them. You guys haven't contacted them. They may be able to, they may be willing to do that. But when outside groups have contacted, mm-hmm. you know, they're not really willing to share their internal data. They just didn't really. They just told them go away. But. I think it was the nature of what they were looking for.
Well,
if you guys, as a purchaser of the stuff, ask for that, you may be able to get that analysis. It's not a requirement. They may be able to provide that kind of information to you. That goes through there. I guess you would have to ask them if you wanted to.
Yeah, I did go online a while back and find the NSF testing for Mosaic Company. 346 odd samples that they took over a four-year time frame, and I cross-checked every single analysis, you know, up and down and back and forth. And so they do post them, I think.
Okay. Well, the chemical companies, yeah. That's where I've seen it out on a lot of the chemical mm-hmm. company websites do have it out there posted.
Mm-hmm.
Many times the communities, one of the reasons the community started the certification analysis, and this maybe where Ann Arbor started that, I'm not mm-hmm. sure what triggered beyond. I know it was a security, both of those mm-hmm. areas, and I think Lansing may also do it because of a security issue, looking at how they're receiving bulk shipments, and we brought that up. They as they go back on the side, one of the biggest things to do is that if you keep it, the concerns were is that if you were receiving fluoride from an overseas or some different sources that would go that are outside of the U.S., that may be a recovered type of a product that may have more higher, that it's not from the mineral that's being extracted, but it's a different process. And so mm-hmm. that was a concern, and that really has been still staying within the mining operations in the United States. But that would have to, you know, if your particular chemical company looks for particular where the sources are, high-grade sources, mm-hmm. again, anybody who's in that market and for drinking water is going to want to provide the best product they can provide. So they're going to buy the product that's going to meet, they have the best levels that's going to be on the span of what they can afford out there to buy. Right. And when you mentioned pharmaceutical grade would not be NSF standard 60 approved unless they mm-hmm. got it approved by NSF, which is they would have to go through the same certification process to get that chemical approved. Because if I have a 98%, mm-hmm. if I have a 99% pharmaceutical grade NAF mm-hmm. product, that 1% could be anything, including pure mercury. That would be an inert ingredient to sodium fluoride. So
yeah.
It could be anything that's in there, and that may very well fail the NSF criteria.
Okay. So one more question, if I may. What is sodium fluorosilicate? Is that recommended at all?
It is also a powder type of thing. It is exactly what is in the, I believe it is what the product is. It comes out of the phosphate fertilizer industry. It is a sodium fluorosilicate, and then it is put into a liquid solution, and that's what fluorosilic acid is. So it's the same thing, except that one allows it to be transported and put in the powder. It takes a lot of energy to take these powders and put them into the water, and so the companies do that for you, basically, and then ship it in a liquid solution to them, so it's easily injected.
All right, thanks.
One last question for Mr. Thurston. Could you comment as to when we removed it from our water system, the hydrofluorosilicic acid, describe either through the state or EPA's description of if that is no longer utilized as a purchased product for water or for municipality water systems, it's disconnected after so many days, I believe it's 60. Could you describe what the legal status of that product is described as? I believe it's hazardous waste, according to the EPA.
What do you mean if it's no longer used in your system?
Right, if it's no longer hooked up, it's no longer product, because that's how it changes when it's purchased, that the EPA no longer is the oversight, correct?
No. It is packaged up in the units for how it has in the barrel that says it is for. It's an SF standard 60. It goes based on the batch and what the expiration date on that barrel is, and that sets there. And many times, like Dan says, he purchases the barrels, there will be two barrels that might sit here for 4 or 5, 6 months.
After it's open, let me quantify it. On an open container that is removed from the water system, Dan, could you address that? We just went through it, that's why I just want it on the record.
That's the reason that I had some difficulty and a delay in getting rid of the chemicals when we stopped. As long as the seal is not broken on the barrel, it is still an NSF-approved chemical, I can return it for credit. And once the seal is broken, the NSF certification, much like Brian was talking about, is not valid. They can't take it back as an NSF-certified chemical. I did talk to the chemical supplier that sold us the stuff. They took it back and had it disposed of themselves, but they didn't have to.
Could you describe what was the term to describe that state that wouldn't allow them to take it back? Is it not hazardous waste?
MDOT classifies any concentrated chemical, acid, or gas as a hazardous substance, and it has to be shipped under DOT regulations.
What is received even from the product right now sealed in the barrels would be, if it spilled, it would be considered a hazardous substance because of the high pH. And the high pH alone will drive it to be a hazardous substance.
Okay.
Record. Thank you.
I'm all set. Laura?
I'm fine.
Okay, we'll move on. In fact, I'm going to make a motion that we take a 5-minute break. It is what time?
8:42.
We'll return at 8:47.
Second.
Roll call.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Motion carried.